Hello and welcome to another Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hellman of First City Church. Every Wednesday we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today we're talking about leaders that leave the faith.
Hey, and before we get into the topic, we just have to acknowledge two things. One, this is our first podcast in our new building.
Yes.
We're actually just hiding out in a room right now because eventually we'll have some actual equipment, but right now it's just we found a room that we could actually meet in and
feels the most conversational.
Yeah, we're sitting in some chairs. Second, Mike Kresnick has a microphone clipped to his beard, which is awesome. I have one clipped to my shirt, but Mike has it literally clipped to his beard.
Normal people hook them to their shirts. I've got mine hooked to my beard.
I mean, we're using a little bit of a mobile podcast setup that's different from our usual gear. So, you know, we're making it work.
Yes.
Mike, I appreciate your innovation here.
Yes.
Chris, it's good to have you back. You've been vacationing and conferencing and doing lots of things that seem restful.
You know, and yes.
So
yes.
I hope you're well rested and full of insight and ready to bless us with your wisdom.
I hope so too.
Okay, so there's been a spate of leaders sort of leaving the faith recently. This happens every once in a while. Just something comes out. Most recently was Joshua Harris Instagramming his deconversion, and then there's a Hillsong worship writer who also had a similar, I don't know what you'd call it, coming out, a similar sort of like, hey, I'm
deconversion notice.
I'm deconverting, or I'm losing my faith, whatever. So we want to talk about that a little bit. There's a lot of things we don't want to talk about related to that. We don't want to speculate on the why. We don't want to bash Christian celebrity culture. Like, a lot of people are laying the blame at, like, and there might be good reasons why we could debate and discuss all of that, but I'm not really interested. When people come to a place of personal existential crisis, I'm not interested in philosophizing about how they got there and why, because I feel like, well, let's just let them tell us how they got there and why, and let's not speculate. And there's probably multiple things happening in anyone's life at any one time that bring them to that kind of a place. What I am more interested in is the questions I've been getting as a pastor from people relate to, hey, so I have some books by this person. Is anything they said still valuable? Or now that they've sort of abandoned the faith, do I just sort of need to jettison whatever I learned from them? So that's one question. I think another question is just, hey, it's really disorienting whenever a leader and a public figure, you know, someone you see as a credible and reliable Christian leader, leaves the faith or begins to sort of step away from their previous understandings and beliefs. And so I think I felt that with the, particularly with Joshua Harris, just feeling like, man, that guy's my same age. We were born in the same year. Our trajectories have been pretty similar in ministry. And it just, I sort of felt that in a deeper way. I was just like, man, that's sad to me. Like, it's not, I have no desire to like throw rocks at the guy. I just feel like, man, it's a bummer. Cause he had a significant influence and a lot of people looked to him as a spiritual leader. And so I feel for those people, the sense of disorientation of like, oh man, what is this person who taught me the Bible and who, you know, I sat under their preaching and now they're saying they don't believe it anymore. That's really disorienting. And so that's what we want to talk about on this podcast, is just as Christians, how do we relate to those kinds of things happening, especially in people that we look up to or people that we see as leaders? So that's the topic that we want to frame up. I have some thoughts, but Chris, why don't you kick us off? What are your reflections here on that question?
Well, I mean, just as one is like on a personal note, this one hit hard. And you know, some people know this, that Josh was many and I's pastor for 2.5 years. When we first moved to the East Coast, we were part of Covenant Life, the church that he was the pastor of. And it's not like we were, you know, we knew Josh and Shannon. I hung out with Josh a couple times. There's a funny story where right after we became members, we bumped into Josh at the bookstore of the church, and we were just talking to him, and he's like, hey, I'm having some people over. You should come over to our house. And we thought, because Josh was like this Christian celebrity when we grew up, he wrote this book and everybody knows who he is. And so we were like, wait, we're going to go over to his house? He's a real person. And so it was kind of funny when that started to get stripped away of just like, yeah, he's a local church pastor and he doesn't want to be viewed as the celebrity. And really what was was cool for me personally is being a part of Covenant Life and seeing Josh and some of the other guys, the way they led was very healing for me. So a lot of the categories of how I think about leading and being a pastor, and even like the way that he preached and different things were very formative for me in a time where I was starting to question some of my theological beliefs and my view of the church. And so he definitely is someone who has had an impact on me. So some of those same questions of, man, someone who was so solid in so many ways and had such an influence and shaping and for me personally to see him make this decision to move away from the faith, it really hurt in a lot of ways and was sad, and knowing, you know, people who are even, you know, close to him, like some of his best friends have been people that, you know, that Mindy and I have been friends with. So it's very personal. This one's very personal in some ways. But at the same time, I think as a pastor, taking a step back and going, okay, how to care for the church and how to speak to people that are going to have questions and going to be confused and disoriented. And so as I've spent some time thinking through that, I think the one of the things that I want to be quick to, you know, point people to is that, look, our hope cannot be in people. And I know that's almost a cliche, but moments like this should just drive that point home over and over again of, no matter how great somebody has been, no matter how much influence that they've had, it's almost as if, you know, the Lord can use these kinds of situations to just sort of just strip away the veneer of, man, the pedestal we can put people on, even, you know, in subtle ways, or the expectations we can kind of put on people, that really our hope is in Christ. And it's funny, like when that first came out, the thing that kept going through my mind is like, this is Joshua freaking Harris. Like the last person in the world you would expect to ever do this. But I think because of that, it really did again emphasize this point. Man, it's but for the grace of God. I think that's the other thing too, is like a humility of, we shouldn't assume that anybody is above this. I think the second thing that comes to mind, and this is, you know, again, not to speculate and get into exactly what caused this for him, but you know, Paul's exhortation to Timothy in 1 Timothy of guard your life and your doctrine carefully. I mean, he says that to Timothy multiple times, because that is of the utmost importance, that this is, in some ways, this is life and death. And so for us as believers, we just can't take things for granted. We can't be lazy in our pursuit of godliness, and lazy in our pursuit of truth that transforms our hearts. And so to whatever degree, you know, these situations kind of provoke certain just humbling moments and humbling reflections, that's what I want to lean in on, Bob, you know, as far as I'm trying to pastor people. Mm.
What do you make of the whole, like, that news going out on Instagram? That's just weird to me.
Yeah. And again, I'll say this, like, you know, nothing but love and just a deep affection for Josh. But Josh has always kind of been the guy that was out there. I mean, he wrote this mega best-selling book when he was 20, starts a conference. You know, he's a lead pastor of a mega church at 30. He's written books. He's done videos. Like, he's always been very public with his words and with his ideas. There was an article that I read by an atheist who was kind of responding to this, and, you know, of course, rejoicing that Josh is in this position. But he made a really good point. Is he said, "I hope Josh just shares with people his ideas and tries to, instead of trying to sell his ideas." And I really would say that in some ways it's a symptom of our culture, you know, social media culture, kind of put everything out there. But I think it also sort of reflects the way Josh has kind of lived his life, his Christian life. And so it almost like just kind of carried over into the way that he he announced his, well, first, you know, the divorce and then his deconversion. So I think if I were to, you know, roll my eyes or one of my sort of, man, Josh, I love you, but that was just dumb. To be honest, like that's just not the best way to do that. You sort of feed some of the worst in this whole kind of celebrity image driven culture.
Yeah. The other thing I would add to the mix is just to say, this is a human being, and the human beings wrestling with doubt, skepticism, despair, confusion is a really normal thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not trying to say, therefore, you should apostatize from the faith. But I do think, this man's my age. So, you know, if by God's grace he lives a long and meaningful life, this is not, this story doesn't end next week, right?
Like,
There's a lot of time ahead. And I'm of the mindset to say, I think a lot of times what happens here for pastors especially is, that there's, and especially someone who has a very public platform of ministry, there's no place to go to like process and wrestle with your doubts, you know, so they just sort of like hang there in the background. That doesn't mean that therefore you should abandon the faith. But I do think that there's a weird and unusual for pastors who have doubts and questions and wrestle with intellectual skepticism, it can be really hard sometimes to know, what do I do with that? Mm-hmm. Because you can show up at a gospel community, if you're a normal Christian, showing up at a gospel community and be like, man, I don't know, I'm having trouble believing the Bible is the word of God. Well, fine. But if you're the pastor and you say that, right, all of a sudden you're like, well, hold on, I'm freaking out a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it does become challenging in some of these leadership contexts to know, how are those doubts and questions and how's that confusion and even pain and hurt supposed to get processed in a helpful way, which is why I'm thankful that there are more and more ministries of counseling and care for leaders and pastors. I think that's a really good thing. But I just think at the end of the day, what I saw here is, oh, yeah, this is a guy and he's got some, I think what he did with his doubts and his confusion and his skepticism is an unhealthy thing to do and a really destructive thing to do for the sake of people. But I don't know that he is that different in what he's wrestling with, that different from a lot of people in Christianity who are struggling with, how do I make sense of some of these things and some of the questions I have about faith and about God?
Yeah. So what would you say to that question of, and he wrote some books and you know, let's just kind of leave the I Kiss Dating Goodbye one aside, because he wrote some other books that are helpful. I mean, he won one of his best books, Stop Dating the Church, I think is a great book on why church membership matters. He wrote a book called Dug Down Deep, which was, you know, why theology matters. I mean, he wrote some good stuff beyond just kind of the stuff he's known for. So, you know, someone picks up the book, Stop Dating the Church, are you going to say, well, Joshua Harris apostatized, probably stay away from that? Or do you think there's still value in the stuff that he wrote?
Well, I mean, truth is truth. So I was thinking, anything anyone says is true. It doesn't matter whether they're, the kind of person you'd want to follow, or the kind of person you wouldn't want to follow. That doesn't make what they said untrue. I think that goes across the board for whether we're talking in the Christian world or just in life in general. Truth is true. All truth is God's truth. So I would not say like, oh, the fact that this person no longer is walking with Jesus means what they said is incorrect or you shouldn't learn anything from it. I realize it makes it more challenging to sort of engage their ideas with. In fact, one person told me, person asked me after church on Sunday, you know, hey, so I have some of this person's books and I just find it hard to read anything that he says now and not just in the back of my mind go, did he really believe this? Like, you know, and I get like, it just casts a pall of doubt over how I interact with an author. It's a lot easier to interact with an author that you feel like, I know with integrity this person's whole story, which is why reading dead people is fun, because you know, like, you know, C.S. yes. Lewis lived a long life and died a Christian, and so we like him, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing with a lot of other authors, right? So there's something to be said for people who their life story is in the past, and you can sort of read with confidence the things that they said and follow their train of thought. But it's interesting to me that it does bring up, Chris, I'm in this world, so I feel like I can say this, and I've tried to think about how do I say this and write about it, and I can't ever figure out a way that isn't going to offend someone. But there is a whole evangelical industrial complex that drives book authorship and conference speaking. And I mean, I'm in this world, right? The fact that I've written stuff means I get asked, hey, would you say something nice about this book I just wrote? Hey, this person's releasing a book. Would you put a blurb on it? It has nothing to do with, have I read the book? Do I think the ideas are good? Do I like the person? It just has to do with, you're Bob Thune. You have a name. You have a platform. Your book on the back of this book, we know, will sell X number of copies. It's literally a calculation about sales. Now, I'm not suggesting that it's sheerly a profit driven. Most of the people in this industry are good, God-loving Christian people, but there's a weird, it's not even a celebrity thing. It's more of a marketing / capitalism thing mm-hmm. that says, you know, gosh, you have an idea? Let's put it out there. So once a guy like Josh Harris wrote a book like I Kissed Dating Goodbye and it's successful and sells millions of copies, guess what the publisher wants? They want him to write another book. And oh, Stop Dating the Church. See, it keys on the theme of dating, but it's really a book about the church. See what they're doing there. I mean, I can almost hear the phone calls and emails he was getting saying, hey, what's your next idea? What's your next book? What else do you want to write? I get these same conversations, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you think of writing about? What else can we put out there? And if I'm the kind of person where I'll just tell my publisher, like, yeah, I don't have any more ideas. So call me back next year. But right now I'm just, you know, I got nothing brewing. But there's a publishing world out there that's seeking to, you know, make a profit off hopefully good and meaningful and thoughtful things. But that's not the only thing driving mm-hmm. That world. Mm-hmm. And so I'm saying all that to say, I can imagine that for someone like Josh, having so much success and popularity early on does push you in a direction where it's like, well, now anything you say, anything you write, anything you speak, somebody wants to platform it and, you know, promote it. And it just becomes hard to step off that train. And especially if you're wrestling with what it seems like he's wrestling with, doubts about the veracity of Scripture, right? Yeah. You know, once you get to that place, it's sort of, you're really vulnerable now because, yeah. You know, you're going to, publishers are going to, you know, turn their back on you. People are going to start freaking out. It becomes more and more challenging to have integrity as a Christian in that world, just because there are so many forces pushing on you and wanting you to say something or tweet something or commend something, that it's really about the market you connect them to more mm-hmm. than it's about the integrity that you have.
Yeah. And I appreciate that because it speaks to some of the dynamics that, you know, he would have faced as an author, as a, you know, in the limelight as a Christian, and it raises interesting questions related to, you know, for someone, you know, whoever asked you this question or others that read his books, of like, so when he wrote this, did he really believe it, kind of thing, like the questions of integrity. And I don't know, like the question is you don't know what's necessarily, like, to your point though, because of the dynamics, it's possible that, you know, he, you know, got caught up in that. But for the sake of argument, I think too, if I was talking to someone, I think I could comfortably say, yes, at the time he wrote that book, he absolutely believed it. Like the human heart and human, our dynamic is there's a mystery and a complexity to it, to where you could genuinely believe that and then, you know, 10 years down the road, deny all of it. And so you know, I don't think that this necessarily calls into question the integrity of the content he wrote when he was writing it. But at the same time, I completely can understand why someone would have struggles reading it, knowing that this is where he is now. Yes. and the integrity of that book. But that again speaks to just the crazy complexity of faith and belief and all the things that go on inside us.
I do think it also speaks to the uniqueness of our moment in history. Because I would say, like, I'm even thinking back to great writers and thinkers, people like C.S. Lewis, G.K. Chesterton, go even further back to Richard Baxter and some of the Puritans, right? Most of those people were writing not as a primary vocation and way of putting yeah. food on the table. Yeah. They were pastors who also had writing ministries. Like, think of Charles Spurgeon. He's preaching his sermons and he's also publishing them and putting them out all over England, but he's primarily a local church pastor. Now, he had a significant amount of celebrity in his day and a significant amount of power in England, but he was a pastor first, right? And now we do have a weird world where there is, look at the blogging world, right? You can pay your bills just writing stuff and having an opinion on stuff. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you have any meaningful leadership among God's people. And so I think it just creates an interesting dynamic where there's these competing forces, right? And again, I have no idea motives and I don't want to speculate, but the relative boringness of a faithful, meaningful life pastoring some people somewhere versus the platform of being a multinational speaker, author kind of person, those things just fight against each other in weird ways. Yeah. And so there's something to be said for, and this is where I always want to just like laud and promote people that are just faithful leaders and pastors and Christians, and that I feel like, man, that's a person who's just faithfully trying to minister in a context, and we should give more and more weight to those kinds of people and more voice to those kinds of people, because there's a certain kind of integrity that comes with that. And we ought to be, if you're asking too, like, okay, what can the, people ask me all the time, like, how can we pray for you as a leader? Well, here's a way. Pray for faithfulness in one place for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. Pray against those sort of temptations and I don't even know if I'd call them temptations more than just like they're sirens, right? They're these songs that call to you that say, hey, come find your meaning and significance in being known by lots of people somewhere. And I think those can be challenges. Especially for pastors who have the gifts and the capacity to do that stuff. You know, it's easy for that to become something that pulls you away from the joy of just faithful ministry in a place, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's what happened for Josh Harris. I'm just saying this instance gives a chance to say that and to talk about that broader complexity of the beauty of being faithful somewhere versus the pull of being known.
Yeah, yeah. I think another thing that comes to mind, and this was the timing of this was pretty cool too. So being back when this kind of came out initially, was at the Acts 29 Global Gathering, and during that conference, the kind of main speaking sessions, they were preaching through 2 Timothy, and this is Paul's letter to Timothy just before he's going to be executed, so he's at the end of his life, and he makes this statement, I've run the race, I've finished, and it can be, you can kind of gloss over that of like, he's just making a statement, I'm done, I'm about ready to die, I made it. But there's something in that Paul is, there's this astonishment that he has, I made it, I made it to the end. And if you contrast that with like him talking about all the people who fell away, all the people that abandoned him, that there really is this miracle of endurance, that there is something just in the fact that somebody lasts, their faith lasts to the end. And in some ways, I think we can take that for granted. I mean, thank God for all the wonderful stories of faithfulness that we know, and the people who have lived long lives of faithfully following Christ and dying in old age, and great testimony. But do we stop and like go, that is a miracle? Like, that is a profound miracle, and just this sense of like, I made it. If we consider all the things that are pulling at our souls, all the things that want to pull us away from Christ, and then you get leaders in particular instances where the pressures are even greater, to just say, I finished the race, I made it, maybe by the skin of my teeth, but I made it. And so for us as Christians to, that there's that call to guard our souls, but then also to have this sense of, man, I want to just finish. I want to endure to the end. Maybe 1,000 people come to know Jesus through me. Maybe I plant 1,000 churches. All the things that we talk about doing big things for God. But there's also just this sense of like, Lord, I just want to endure to the end, and that might be a great, great thing in and of itself.
Two thoughts I have as you say that. One is, I also want to encourage there's two ways this can make us skeptical, things like this. One, oh gosh, another leader fell away. Are all leaders going to fall away? Well, I think what we see in the New Testament is, yeah, some of them are. Like, this should not be a surprise to anyone. I think people feel like, oh, a pastor falling away is a bigger deal and more crazy and scary than my brother, you know, or my guy down the that sits down the pew from me in church falling away. Well, really, it's not. They're both Christians falling away. One just seems more dramatic because there's a platform and a publicness to it.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying the New Testament told us to expect this. We should not be surprised.
Yep.
The other thing is, I think this can make people we can lump together celebrity and platform with influence. And so this can cause people to become skeptical of, well, anybody that writes a book or has any kind of influence is bad, you know, or like no, we should just all pray against all of that stuff. And actually, I would say, well, no, you want, like, we want faithful, godly people to have influence. If we want to see renewal in the world, I would rather, you know, people who preach the Bible faithfully have influence in Africa rather than TBN and the prosperity gospel people, right?
Yeah.
So what we can't do in these situations is, I think we rightly need to critique sort of celebrity culture and sort of that evangelical industrial complex that I was talking about. But we also need to be careful that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because we do want to see faithful pastors have platform and have opportunities to influence the broader conversations in our world. We just want that to happen in a way that has integrity. And there are going to be some casualties in that. And that just is what it is. You know, it's why Paul names names in the New Testament. You know, so the reason he knows who, you know, the reason you know who the people he, you know, he's using names is because his readers would have known, oh, that guy? Really? That guy fell away? Yeah, well, that guy. So I want to avoid against the overcorrection here that starts to make people skeptical of, oh, any kind of writing or speaking or public ministry is automatically going to go down this road.
Yeah, as if there's a perfect structure to avoid that. I mean, look, Judas was with Jesus for 3 years. I mean, it's like, you know, there is no structure that you can avoid it. But it's a good point, Bob, that the New Testament sets this expectation very clearly. And so in some ways, it should not be surprising. Yeah, it still hurts. It's still sad. And we still can respond appropriately. But yeah, it's going to keep happening. Josh isn't the last big name person to do this. He wasn't the first. But there, again, I think in these moments, there's a great opportunity for reflection on you know, kind of what does the New Testament call us to in light of these fallings away.
Here's the other thing you have to reflect on as a listener. Charles Taylor talks about subtraction stories in our culture, and what happens when someone like Josh Harris departs from the faith is everybody in the non-Christian world loves that because it fits the narrative that modernism wants to tell, which is, hey, back when everybody believed in fairies and demons and sprites and spirits and gods, of course, but, you know, we've moved on from that world. And so anytime another Christian sort of quote unquote moves on from that world, the rest of the world sort of celebrates that and says, oh, this person's woken up and become enlightened. So you have to realize there's a whole cultural narrative that story is being fit into. And that has effect on how we read that story. And so I think for some of us, for Christians who feel a defensive posture in the world and feel like, man, it feels like everybody's falling away, then you read another story like that, and you're like, crap, there goes another one, you know? Versus realizing, again, letting the New Testament frame our understanding of reality to say, hey, throughout the history of the church, there's going to be faithful pastors and unfaithful pastors. There's going to be Christians who persevere, and there's going to be people who seem to fall away. The Bible told us to expect this and not to fit it into a cultural paradigm right now that says, oh yeah, this just proves that all Christians are backwards and bigoted and old-fashioned, and if they really wake up and glimpse reality, they'll all come and be enlightened and progressive and abandon the faith. That's not the story that we inhabit, nor is that story telling the truth about reality, but it is a story that our culture loves, which is why I read the same atheist article you did. You know, people sort of like love to tell the Josh Harris story because, like, see, it proves that all of these poorly enlightened Christians, just give them time and they'll come around and see that they believe a bunch of crap, you know? So I like to, in these moments, not fret and not freak out and not sort of succumb to that narrative, even, you know, and just to say, like, yep, these things, I'm saddened, you know, because I love Josh and I loved the people that he ministered to. And so I want to be appropriately saddened. It doesn't feel like he's very sad about it. And so I want to say, I also understand he's living in some sort of story, and there's something in his life that brought this to the forefront. And so I want to love him, pray for him, hope the best for him, and trust that not just his story, but others like this aren't over yet. You know, there's more to the story here.
Yeah.
In many situations that we don't know what the future holds. And so I'm not going to fret and freak out over, people abandoning the faith or departing from orthodoxy. I'm going to say, well, I believe the Lord knows what he's doing, and he's going to be faithful to his church. And I'm going to resist the sort of cultural triumphalism on the non-Christian side that says, yes, see, this just fits our, mm-hmm. our paradigm.
Yeah. Yeah. And to whatever degree, you know, for Josh Harris doing this, it might have a one level effect, but you know, if you have a pastor that you're close to or a friend or family member, to whatever degree this, something like this creates a sense of confusion and disorienting for you, just let me encourage you, let that drive you to the Lord in prayer, to pursue Christ even more. Let it drive you to getting, like you were saying, Bob, perspective from God's word, from the scriptures, to reorient you to what is true. Let this drive you closer to good community. Let it move towards the Lord in any sort of sense of confusion and disorienting, not away. Don't let this make you skeptical and want to move away from church and just throw it all out. These are opportunities to draw nearer to God and find comfort in Him, and so that, you know, that is always going to be the burden that I, you know, I'm going to have for people when they really start to feel this in a deep way.
Well, that's going to do it for today's conversation. We want to thank you for listening in, and we hope and pray that this conversation is helpful in your context of ministry and life. If you have questions or topic ideas, shoot us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday on another Wednesday Conversation.